So welcome to another episode of the CEO Story, and we've got a cracking one today. We've got a fellow Brit on there, Rory Bamington, and he is the CEO and founder of Fabric Staffing, an absolutely revolutionary staffing agency. So we're going to have a lot of trans-America, UK vibes going on in this one. So Rory, thank you so much for joining us. How have you been doing?
Yeah, thanks, Casey. I appreciate it. Yeah, been good. It's a new year. New challenge, you know. Last year or last couple of years have been a whirlwind, so excited to see what 2023 brings.
I'm sure it's going to be awesome. So let's start just by sharing a little bit high level about yourself and about Fabric Staffing. What do you guys do? And then we'll jump into the detail from there.
Sounds good. Yeah. So originally from London, England, as you mentioned, fellow Brit. I lived in Australia also for 4 years, which confuses a few people. They think I'm Australian or English or Kiwi.
It's the odd word that comes through. Like when we first started talking, it sounded more Australian, but now that explains it.
Yeah, there we go. I don't tell people that right off the bat. I like to keep them guessing. But yeah, I used to be a DJ and a music producer back in the rave days, so to speak. So I ended up moving to Australia then, and then that took me to the US, primarily LA, and that's where I sort of migrated or settled in, was Los Angeles. I worked for a previous staffing agency called Talonite. I was employee number 5 or 6. They're a New York-based firm, and I helped them grow from 5 or 6 to about 160 when I left, something around there. No, they were quite big. We had 6 offices. Started Fabric 7 years ago now. Well, I'll be 7 years in February. So it's been a while. And the whole preface of starting Fabric was, A, to start my own thing, and taking the experience I had, working under the guidance of someone else, to do something a little bit different in the space and try and disrupt the market a little bit. And, Fabric, we work, we specialize in rapid growth hiring for small to mid-sized companies. I'd say a lot of startups, Series A, Series B is primarily type of client we work with. Anyone that is hiring, tech talent and product talent, in abundance, they can't hire people quick enough. That's who we work with. We have a subscription model, which is, different to most agencies. They tend to go after the big perm fees, where we're more of a more cost-effective approach, I say, to staffing.
Well, that's very important in today's world as well, right? Just to have some USP.
Yeah, just trying to help companies grow without charging them exorbitant fees every time they do. So, the way we look at it is we're helping companies by also saving them a bucket load of money. I mean, there's one client that we worked with recently. We saved about 500 grand for in the space of 6 months. So,
but even on that fee side, the fact that you charge fees in that way, like I've over my career seen recruiters and specific like executive recruiting firms charge upwards of hundreds of thousands of dollars to fill these roles. And I could never really justify it when I was putting together budgets and forecasts. And it's like, yeah, okay, 10, maybe 20%, but when you start paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to fill one role, it's like that needs to be a really important role. And I couldn't quite get my head around it.
Yeah. We after a while, companies just don't want to do it. They're like, oh, I don't want to be paying, even on the low end, 40K to hire every time, whereas we've got a much more cost effective approach to do that. It's basically like a company outsourcing their internal recruitment department. That's pretty much what we do in a nutshell. Or, for companies that have their own internal recruitment department already, we're an extension to it, which we also, work with. We work with some bigger companies that have established internal recruitment departments that really need a team to come in to fill their engineering roles, right? And that's what we do as well. So it works out well, enables us to predict our revenue more and enables companies to hire people without breaking the bank every time. So, yeah.
No, it's really important. And, as companies kind of scale, either be it remotely or in office or even a hybrid, they definitely need to find better talent. It's something we've struggled with as a company in terms of as we've been growing rapidly, and it's like we start to run out of pools of people, and then it's like, okay, we don't just have to look in LA, we can look remote now. And then there's always, at least in my mind, an efficiency trade-off with being in person versus being remote. And I'm okay with that because you've got such a wider pool of talent to pick from. But it definitely then has knock-on consequences on culture within organization and relationships, because you can't have the same relationship over Zoom or over a web conference compared to in person, right?
Yeah, there's something about it, but it's never going to change, you know. I found with us, you know, doing, you know, quarterly offsites or team trips, as we want to call them, you know, and getting together once a quarter is a new way of doing it. Obviously, that becomes more challenging as you get bigger. But yeah, no, I mean, as you know, to your point, nothing really replaces the in-person. I still haven't found a way around training remotely yet. You know, with any new onboarding or training we do, it's done, you know, in person with me primarily. So I still haven't. We tried it at Zoom once and it didn't work. You know, so and again, it's just that relationship you build with new employees in person is just far greater than, you know, it's almost like building that solid foundation, you know, and then they can go off and be remote once they have that foundation and that trust and that relationship with you already. But doing it remote is tough. I do think a blend is great, you know, and figuring that out. But yeah, I don't think remote work is going away. I just think that there'll be more of a blend going on, which I think is the right way of doing it.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense because it gives you levels of flexibility without being so corporate and rigid, so that people can go do things that they need to. And it's not, hey, you have to be in an office at 9 o'clock or you're getting written up. Like, I hated that environment when I was kind of cutting my teeth in corporate. And it's like, I'm not going to create that, even though we've started to do that hybrid and come back in office now. It's definitely, hey, I've got this errand to run, or this has come up. All right, well, go deal with that first and then make sure you're happy. Because if you're happy as on the personal side, that's definitely going to translate into the business side where you're going to produce more and become more productive, right?
I literally just had the same conversation with a buddy of mine that I go to the gym with, who's my gym partner. And his boss is a bit of an old school sort of micromanager. And he was calling him and at, you know, 5 o'clock, you know, which is the time we go to the gym, saying, where are you? Like, there's still people in the office till six. Like, why are you not here? You know, it's like, well, I'm taking time for myself. I'm working at the gym. And I said to him, I said, you know, with my crew, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, you don't need to sit there and work 8 hours a day all the time. You know, a lot of people are productive in three and four. I know I am. I get all my work done between the hours of 5 a.m. and 8 a.m., which is the time I get up. I get up at 5 every day. But that's when I get a lot of my work done. And I don't really care when or how
I
work.
I'm similar in one degree. I'm the other way around. I'll get more work done between the hours of 10 p.m. and 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
No one's bothering me there. I think it's the same principle.
Yeah.
Is that the day's done. Emails aren't coming in. My wife's asleep in bed or next to me. We're good to go. And I can just now focus on, hey, these are the things that either urgent or not urgent, but need my attention.
Yeah.
And I can do that in a peaceful, rested state rather than a million things always happening during the day. And I think to the point at which, let's dig into that a little bit more, because it caused me a huge problem when I first arrived to America. I was working with a big multi S&P 500 corporate company, and exactly that thing that you just described with your friend. I don't know if it's a British thing versus an American thing, or just a corporate thing in general, or specifically American corporate thing in general. But my boss was exactly like that. She would rather me sit there for 12 hours twiddling my thumbs or playing on Facebook at the time on my phone, rather than be there for 5 super solid productive hours, get all my checklist of stuff done, and then bounce. Because for her, it was all about perception over results.
Right.
And for me, I'm complete opposite. If you get your stuff taken care of and your work done, and it takes you an hour, then kudos. Go to the beach, go relax. Like, as long as the work is getting done, I actively do not want you to be sat there trying to look busy. I want you to go enjoy yourself because exactly everything's done way. And the work is being achieved, right?
Exactly the same, mate. Yeah, it's the same way I welcome my guys. I mean, for example, we don't work Friday afternoons. Like I always give them, you know, some Fridays, as they call it in America, right? Every Friday, you know, we do a town hall at the end of the week and they're off. That's it. Go enjoy your weekend, you know. But yeah, I don't care how they're doing the work or what their schedule is. Like we've got one girl that works better at night, like you, right? It's like, great. So I'll wake up the next day and I'll get a load of emails from her from the night before. Everyone, you know, is used to getting emails from me early in the morning because that's when I wake up. So it doesn't really matter when you do stuff. And to your point, you know, as I said to my buddy, you know, he was the same way. He's like, yeah, my boss would rather us just be sitting there, not even do anything. The fact that we're sitting there, I was like, it's pointless. Why not let them enjoy some time to themselves and go and do something healthy like you're doing, working out and feeling better about yourself? Because here's the thing. If you're working out and being healthy and doing something productive for yourself, you're going to feel more confident because you look and feel better and you know, your mind's clearer, etc. That just breeds in you're going to be better at work. You're going to be more productive at work. You're going to be able to handle more things. I don't get people that have this mentality of, you know, you've got to be there for, you know, 8 hours a day because that's what I'm paying you. Like, no, you're paying them to produce results ultimately. So,
but that's the perception difference, isn't it? Is that when we see it, or what kind of the mentality that we have is, it's the result that we're paying for. And whether that takes 8 hours or 80 hours, we still want that same result to that same level and that same standard. Now, if you're smart about it and you can get that done in 5 hours, then I'm even more happy because now, because you're efficient, you've bought back some time.
Yes. No, exactly. Yeah, totally. I mean, you're paying for results at the end of the day. You know, so I don't care if it takes 10 minutes, you know, get the results.
Let's move into the next question. So kind of your career progress was quite funny because you wouldn't necessarily put rave DJing with recruiting, right? How did all that come about in the same realm? That's interesting to me.
Well, you know, it's also kind of similar when you think about it, right? So as a DJ, you're constantly selling and promoting yourself. You're going out to promoters and, you know, talking to promoters about, oh, let me play out your gig and, you know, this, that and the other. But then, you know, you're producing music and hoping that people like that music, and then you're getting gigs that way, et cetera, et cetera. So in a sense, recruiting is a lot of ways the same type of thing. You're always promoting yourself. You're always going out there and trying to generate, you know, business in recruiting aspects. Is you're always out there trying to recruit candidates and good talent. But at the same time, you're, you know, on top of stuff, things like social media and creating your own online brand and creating your own brand at the end of the day. So coming from DJing, where I created my own brand, and yeah, I had a record label, a few record labels, I think, in the end, but you're still creating your own brand yourself. If you look at DJs like Tiesto and people like that, they have their own brand, right? They play a certain style. They play a certain way. They engage with a crowd in a certain way. They have an online presence and yada, yada, yada. So it's pretty similar. It can transcend if you do it the right way. Yes, you know, getting into recruiting was, you know, I wasn't going out, and you know, it was a different target audience, right? I'm not going out to raid promoters and, you know, trying to sell myself. I'm now selling someone else that is talented into a company. So it's the same preface, you know, it's the same.
So it's the skill set that you acquired over all these years in nightclubs and events spaces to sell yourself. You then were able to reuse the majority or a big part of that skill set that you'd polished, but just in a different industry.
Yeah, basically, you know.
And then what made you pick recruiting as that industry to start in?
I would love to say that was very well thought out and planned. It wasn't. you know, I literally moved to LA, decided that I was DJing for like 10 years, I think, and decided that, hey, I think I was 28 when I went into recruiting. decided that I want to be one of those guys that's still DJing to young kids when they're 50 and old. You know, I just didn't want to be there. And I was like, okay, if I don't get out now, I'm just never going to get out. You know, and I still love music to this day, right? But I got to the point where it became a bit of a chore. And if you fall out of love with doing something,
and you get tired, that's a lot of late nights and early starts, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a lot of, definitely a lot of long nights and early starts, especially in the UK when you're doing like 4 or 5 gigs a night and you're traveling up and down the UK because you can by car. I used to have a driver in the end because it was just, you know, I couldn't keep doing it all the time. But recruiting just kind of came about, you know, opportunistically, I guess. I had a kind of, I was always interested in sales. I've done some sales jobs before in the UK, and decided that, yeah, I'll apply for sales jobs. And everything I was offered was recruiting. And it was funny because I'd use recruiters in the UK for, you know, temp jobs while I was a starving artist, so to speak, you know, and trying to make it in the DJ world. And I always remember I just never really wanted to be a recruiter because those people would never listen to you. You know, they would always have gone about for themselves. There was no genuine care, you know. All they cared about is how much money they could make off you. And I just didn't like that mentality. So, but, you know, I was just offered recruiting and I had 3 offers from 3 different companies. I decided to go with the riskiest one. But I also made a pact that I would never be like those other recruiters that I'd worked with. I would be honest with people. Brutally honest, even if they didn't like it, I would always think about their needs, not my own, you know, and just do things the right way, you know, and it, especially in LA, you know, and you and I have both lived in, or you still live in LA, I lived in LA for 10 years. I think for me, you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in that LA, and a lot of talk, and people say a lot of stuff that they don't really mean, and there's no genuine care there. So when someone comes in who is honest, who is going to tell you how it is, who does come across as genuine because they actually genuinely are, it went a long way. So
it definitely differentiates you from the crowd, especially in LA. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Great. So that was good. And then you did 7+ years with that company. Was that in England and America, or how did the transition from England to LA come about?
Yeah, it was England via Australia for 4 years, and then Australia to LA. But no, they're a New York-based company. Again, it was just a job I applied for. I think it was on like Monster or one of those job sites. The CEO I liked a lot, and he said to me, hey, I'm building something. You know, I've done this before. You know, I worked at another large agency, similar to me, like worked at another large agency and, you know, wanted to build, you know, something special and something different. I believed in what he was doing, and I liked the fact that it was smaller and I could have a real impact or at least try to. I felt that he would be a good guy, a good mentor for me, which honestly was really, really important. You know, me looking at things long term and believing that this guy would be a great mentor, which, by the way, he turned out to be the best mentor ever. He was amazing. That's why I took it on. And he wanted me to start an LA office, which I had no experience of. Just moved to LA sort of 6 months ago. And it was amazing. It was amazing 7 years. And
fantastic. See, there's a few really, really good lessons in there that, you know, you go from falling into a career because you were good at communication and sales, backing yourself, not really knowing what you're doing, but just going for it anyway, refining your craft. And we'll get into the next part in a second, but taking skills you already had or had learned, even in a different industry, and then applying them and muddling through. I like a lot of that because a lot of it is exactly the same as my story. So it resonates with me. So then with that company, it was what called Talana, right?
Yeah.
So with them, you were there for what, 6-7 years?
Yeah, 7 years, yeah.
How did he take it when you left to go start your own company?
Did not like it.
How did you break it to him? How did that conversation go?
You know, here's the thing. I still regret the way it's one of the only things I regret in life. And I don't live my life with regrets. But I knew that.
Well, you can't. You're a Chelsea fan, so yes. How can you?
No, exactly. I knew that if I called him, I was basically supposed to go to New York to build out a new, arm of, the agency for him. And I was all gung-ho about doing it, but I had something in me said, listen, you need to go start your own thing. If you don't do it now, you never will. I knew that if I had called him and tried and said, listen, I'm leaving. And I knew this because I'd done it before and he talked me back into staying. And by the way, I only wanted to quit I think 12 months prior because I wanted more incentives from the start. That's how kind of selfless I've always been. Just been like, I think about other people ahead of my own, which sometimes...
Well, one of the sayings I live by is if you help enough people get to their goal, a byproduct of that is you'll achieve your goal. So 100%. It's the same principle.
I say, hey, if you get what you want, I get what I want. That's just how it is. But I knew that if, going back to the point, I knew that if I'd called him, he'd have convinced me to stay, and I would have stayed there then forever, probably. So I quit over email, which is, in my mind, a coward's way out, right? But I did it for a reason. We still talk to this day, and I'm sure he still hates me for it to this day. But so if you're listening, Mike, apologies, which I've already apologized to him multiple times. But he was such an influential person in my life that I'll always thank him for it.
See, it's key for the people listening and watching is to find a mentor that's either been there, done that, or can help guide you at least through life experiences, because you just accelerate your path to success or whatever success looks like to you so much quicker when you find a mentor that does that, because you learn from their mistakes. You don't have to make those same mistakes, which cost time, energy, and money.
I say to people all the time, because I'm obviously, we give a lot of career advice to people, right? We don't just help them find a new job, et cetera. We give them a lot of career advice as well. I say to people all the time, stop looking at the shiny objects, right? Start looking, especially if people are, early on in their career, even if they're later on in their career, you need to find a good mentor. That's what you do. The person that you're going to be, ultimately reporting to and working for, that's the person you want to look at as do I want to join this company? Because people don't quit the company, they quit their boss, right? And the same token, if you have a really good mentor and someone that's going to elevate you and teach you and really help grow, not only professionally, but personally, that's worth its weight in gold. Like, that's priceless, I'm a prime example of that. I would not be here today without, Mike. I just wouldn't. So... and the great thing, is, and not only that, but the great thing is because he was that way with me, I am that way with everyone else. And I still have, a lot of people that come to me that I've helped train and develop, to this day to say, man, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be where I am now. And that's why I get up in the morning.
There's a couple of principles that just reminds me of growing up and kind of the values that my family instilled in me is treat other people as you would like them to treat you. And that saying was such a simple saying. I didn't quite get it when I was so younger, but as I kind of get older, it's like, it's so true. It's like, if you just look at life through their lens, and I had a conversation with one of my team members and it was, hey, I understand this situation. This is what I want for the company, but I understand it's going to impact you here, here, and here. So we need to just find a middle ground that works for you and your family first, and then for us as well. And he turned around and he's like, you know what? No one's ever took the time to think of it and put me first like that. And he was just so taken back by the way that I was more caring of him than my own position. And it ended up working out really well, because you build such stronger, deeper relationships by actually caring rather than just take, right?
Yeah, I mean, I remember one thing that I remember I sat down with Mike, and he might not remember this, but I do. It stuck with me for a long time. People, used to sort of almost put me up on a pedestal when I was working at the previous company, and I never knew why. I was like, why do people gravitate towards me so much? I don't get it. If you have a question like why you're so good at something, you just don't understand why. And I said to him, why do you love me so much? Like, why? Because I was a bit of a pain in the ass at times. I said, why do you love me so much? And why do other people love me so much? And he said, you know why? Simple thing, genuine care. He's like, you actually genuinely care about people, and they will see past your mistakes because of that reason. And you know what? He also genuinely cared about me. And that's probably where, you know, as a lot of it is my upbringing for sure. But also having a really good mentor, you know, and having someone like that.
It rubs off, right? It's like these lessons that they've learned to become super successful. And one of the stories I'll share quickly before we call it a day is that I had a fantastic day, really, really amazing day, both from a value perspective. We did a really big talk. It went really well. We impacted a lot of people's lives. Byproduct, it became very successful for the company. And I'd probably made the most amount of money in that one, maybe 1.5 hour period than I had my entire life. So I called my mentor up. I'm driving back to LA. I'm like, hey, what you up to? He's like, oh, I'm just heading for a cigar. So we smoke cigars together. And he's like, I'm like, all right, I'll meet you over the club. So we go to our cigar lounge and we start smoking. And I'm like, hey, how's your day been? And obviously, respectfully, I want to hear his opinion first, even though he knows I've had a great day and I'm excited. I'm like, no, tell me all about your day. And he goes and he starts telling me about his day. And he's like, he had a really good day too. And I'm like, fantastic. Because when he's having a good day, the level is just like ridiculous. So he'd done a deal and he'd made $1 billion in that day.
Wow.
And I was like, holy shit, that's amazing. And I'd made 7 figures that day. And that was my most successful single day. And I was like, how can I now go from $1 million day to $1 billion day? Because it elevated my thinking and my mindset to say, hey. And I asked him straight, I'm like, hey, how do I go from 1 million to 1 billion? And he's like, you already there. It's just another few zeros. Don't even worry about it, because the same amount of effort and energy that got you where you are, you just got to put a little bit more thinking in and you can get to that next level. And I was like, it blew my mind how simple it was. Yeah. But just to be able to share that moment with him and then instantly get a new perspective and a new goal. And it's like, there's people around us everywhere that are hitting these numbers. And it's how, if you're not surrounded by the right people who genuinely care, who genuinely will share those things with you, it's not going to elevate you as quickly.
No, exactly. No, for sure. It's 100% who you surround yourself with, you know, so.
Fantastic. Yeah. So if people want to reach out to you, Rory, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Just via email, rory@fabricstaffing.com or for our website, fabricstaffing.com.
Okay, I'll put the links below. So we've got the website and we've got your personal email there. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
Take care.